Chapter 6. Aspen. Aspen stared down into the freshly built well. William had created the stone-lined hole in a little over a night, and Aspen and Mott had built the surface structures in less than a week. Now a neat round well sat near the center of the new fields. A small windmill drew water up and dumped it into a simple raised irrigation system on wheels that Kor and Sarave could shift to water the different fields. He was both very proud and very nervous as he looked at the new structures. Reading about building something in a book could be very different from creating useful devices. He desperately wished that he was staying here to fix the inevitable mishaps, even though he knew Sarave was smart enough and could read well enough now to puzzle out how to solve the common problems described in Well, Now You Have Water by Art E. Shawn. Rouge, already astride Codswallop, who was prancing eagerly in place, cleared her throat loudly. Let's go. I only have 4 hours before work is over, and Mott and I switch places. She hitched a thumb at her father's zombie, standing nearby in a massive black suit of armor. The combination of his unnatural stillness and the blank black helmet made him seem astonishingly threatening. Sumi, hanging from the roof covering the well, rubbed her legs together worriedly. Are you certain I shouldn't come with you, Aspen? Sending you with just Silas and the two travelers seems unwise. Aspen shook his head, patiently repeating the same argument they'd had since yesterday. Now that we know there will definitely be attacks on the farm, you need to stay here. When we hoped it was only travelers who would follow me, it made sense for you to come, but not now. Kor will need someone to keep watch at night. He can't do everything, and the others are emergency support only. He set his hand gently on Sumi's cephalothorax, carefully avoiding ruffling the sensitive hairs. She shuddered at the unfamiliar feeling, before leaning toward him slightly. Take care of them for me, my oldest friend, he said somberly, and heard her mental sigh. All right. The spider switched to party chat. Take care of him, Rouge and Mott. We did not bring him here only to lose him after all. There was no overt threat in her voice, but it was cold as an ancient grave. Rouge saluted jauntily. Gotcha. We'll protect him with our lives. Like, literally. We both set the farm as our respawn points, using your shrine to Gina, so if things go wrong, you'll have a chance to kill us again yourself. The traveler girl sounded far too cheerful to be talking about such a grim subject, but Aspen knew she was just excited to get going, and all the optimism of youth was telling her that things would be fine. Kor scraped his hoof in the dirt anxiously. The huge goat was standing near Sumi with a duck on his head, and two young unicorns prancing around him as if he were a drab sort of maypole. Hurry up and go. The sooner you leave, the sooner you'll be back. Sarave had a smile pasted on beneath her worried eyes, and nodded from her place nearby. Indeed, friend Aspen. Sooner begun is sooner done, as Jeremy used to say. Sadness flitted over her face, and she clutched a little tighter at Juniper's hand. Juniper, who clearly didn't understand what was happening, and only wanted to play with the unicorns, struggled a little against her mother's grip. Her big blue irises, surrounded by the yellow sclera of her mother's people, were locked on her furry friends. Bye-bye, Uncle Aspen. Go away. Everyone laughed, and Aspen finally turned to face south. All right then. I can take a hint. He pulled his hat down over his eyes, hiked his pack higher on his shoulders, and took off at a jog, heading for the mountains. The first 4 hours were easy, and they made good time. Everyone kept with Aspen's easy trot, and Rouge was too busy looking around and practicing with her mambele to maintain much of a conversation beyond such things as, oh? The spring flowers are sprouting. Mott's zombie stayed a steady 15 feet behind Rouge and Codswallop. The packhorse burrito, which was apparently a tasty meal made with flatbread, meat and beans back in the traveler's home dimension, and which Rouge seemed to find inordinately amusing, was tied to Mott and kept up with them easily. Silas, of course, was sleeping in her basket on Aspen's pack. When the sun was high overhead, they stopped at the highest point of a large foothill. Beyond this point, they would enter the actual mountains, and the levels of the beasts there were much higher than those of the foothills and flatlands. Rouge climbed down off Codswallop, wincing slightly and rubbing her behind as though it pained her, which it likely did. Aspen turned his gaze away politely and dug in his pack for lunch, careful not to disturb Silas' basket. When Rouge felt that her buttocks had been sufficiently restored, she fed Codswallop and the mule, then flopped down on the ground before promptly jumping up again. Yuck! I miss the times when I could sit anywhere and only be a little uncomfortable. That dirt is cold and damp. I'm glad I'll be logged out while you guys go through the high passes. I bet there's still a lot of snow up there. She toed the frozen ground experimentally, grimacing. Aspen smiled at her from his seat on a fallen tree, munching his lunch as if he hadn't a care in the world. When will your father return? She wrinkled her nose. Call him Mott. We don't use dad and daughter in public. Some people get weird when they find out. Most people think he's my overprotective big brother. She grinned. A few girls not much older than me have even asked him out. It's gross but hilarious to watch him try to turn them down nicely. Aspen swallowed his bite. Has anyone asked that he did accept? Rouge cackled. No. He never dates. He definitely wouldn't start with a little gamer girl young enough to be one of his students. Heck, he's actually met a few of his students in, she flicked her eyes at him, bright. He didn't tell them who he was, of course. It's part of why he wears a full helm most of the time. I mean, he hasn't lately, but that's because you're his friend. I see. Aspen kept his voice neutral, wondering why he felt a little relieved. Anyway, he'll be on in about an hour. His class and office hours are over, but he has to get home before he can log in. I have to go now, and his zombie is linked to me. It'll just be you, Wally, and Silas for a while. Are you sure you'll be all right? She looked a little worried, and tossed her Mombele from hand to hand, as she did when she was nervous. He nodded. The higher-level beasts are in the actual mountains. I'm sure we'll meet some as we pass through, but between Maud and I believe it will be fine. I made it through last fall with just Kor, Sumi, and Silas. Aspen neglected to mention the several pieces of long-burning incense the head librarian had given them before they left. It lasted for a day, and drove away monsters of a higher level than your own, except for field bosses. It also stank of unclean socks and rotten fish, but nothing was perfect. The worst part had been listening to Kor gripe for almost 2 weeks about how he'd never get the smell out of his fur. He looked hard at Rouge, who was chewing her lip and flipping her blade faster and faster as she glanced at something visible only to her. A timer, he suspected. Are you all right? She sighed and seemed to deflate slightly. I have to take the bus all the way home today. Usually, I go to the college and ride home with Mott. But he'll be going home without me today, so he can protect you in the mountains. It'll be fine, but I'm a little nervous. I have to make a couple of connections, and I won't get home until after 6. Aspen frowned, trying to make sense of this. A bus is a public conveyance of some sort? Rouge nodded. Yeah, kind of like a really big carriage that picks up anyone who can pay and transports them along a preset route. So, you have to go by all the places other people need to go, that are in between where you get on and where you need to go. The tall man scowled, feeling concern rise up in him. No matter how competent and dangerous Rouge was in this world, as he understood it, she was more like a lady of means in her other world. This does not sound safe. When you leave, you should contact your father, he corrected himself, Mott, and tell him to wait for you at his school. I can remain here until you're both safe at home. The elf girl shook her head. No, really, it's okay. Thousands of people do it every day. I'll be fine. Plus, I don't need two of you going all protective on me. Seriously, one dad is plenty. You just stay here, and Mott will be here in an hour or so. She pointed an accusing finger at him. Don't move. Then her eyes went blank, and her arms fell to her sides. Her body, usually constantly moving in some way, stilled. He shuddered. He would never get used to that. More importantly, though, he was worried for her. He hated how helpless he felt to protect her in that other world. He had come to consider her a friend, if not something more like a daughter. Perhaps if he and Calliope had stayed together and had another daughter, she would have been like the cheerful traveler girl. No. He sighed. Truthfully, any child of his would likely have been far too serious, as Birdie had been. The life he had provided wasn't one in which a cheerful and outgoing child would have flourished. He clenched his jaw against the pain that thinking of his lost daughter brought, and pressed his fist over his heart, curling in around the pain, though whether he meant to beat against it or protect it he couldn't say. As the pang of loss faded, he stood, brushing his frozen rear with his hands until feeling began to return to it. He'd been a little afraid his pride would cause him to lose his buttocks to frostbite if Rouge hadn't left soon. Glancing around, Aspen took in the still forms of the two travelers, a disgruntled codswallop, who was nuzzling Rouge's zombie and ignoring Aspen entirely, and the patient mule chomping brown wisps of grass nearby. He scratched his jaw, knowing that if he didn't do something until Mott returned, he would simply dive into a festering pool of self-loathing that could take days to escape. His eyes caught on his pack and the long metal bar protruding from it. At the last moment, he had grabbed the bar from the leftover scrap from the plow to use for Mage Smith practice. Aha! Now there was a plan. By the time Mott blinked his eyes, Aspen was deep in a creative stupor. Under his hands was a rotating curved blade, around 2 feet long with a viciously sharp edge. That edge was glowing a soft gold, and heat waves rose from it, oddly disconcerting in the cool air. Aspen gasped and opened his hands, letting the blade drop, released from his magic. It fell to the ground, chiming like a bell as it hit a rock. He took off his hat, wiped his forehead with his sleeve, and slapped his hat back on. He looked up and grinned at Mott. "Good timing, my friend. I was just seeing if I could create a farming implement with a bit of, flexibility in its purpose." He smiled wryly. "I failed the first 3 times, since I kept picturing it as a weapon. Once I started thinking of it as a tool for mowing grass, things went much more smoothly." Mott's usual solid black helmet vanished into his inventory, exchanged for one that revealed his mature, intelligent face, and he smiled. "No making weapons, eh? I'd wondered why you hadn't made something for Sarave and William to use to defend themselves." The farmer sighed. Gina was clear about that. "Farming implements only. If I had had more time, I would have left them something besides some axes and a pickaxe, but I'll be back before harvest, so this," he held up the blade carefully, "didn't occur to me." Mott cocked his head. "Sideblade?" Aspen nodded. "I'll attach it to my staff. I've never had much use for weapons other than magic and the staff, but I know the basics. I was once an enlisted soldier, though I rose up through the ranks rather quickly, once they discovered my speciality. Necromancy was illegal, you know, but they changed the law when it became clear how useful I could be against Lich Lord Akuji's minions." Mott puffed out a breath, shaking his head, and busied himself with transferring Burrito's lead from himself to Codswallop. "The more I hear about the human government, the less I wonder how things got so bad. Duke Gerald is power-hungry, and King Chester is incompetent." He picked up Rouge's zombie and placed her on Codswallop's back. "I'm amazed humanity wasn't wiped out." Aspen carefully wrapped his new blade in leather and slid it into his pack, then picked up the pack and slung it over his shoulders. "I am as well. The Duke and the King both tried to get you travelers involved in the battle, but when you all discovered that Akuji could strip away your skills and levels, you refused to fight any but the lowest of his creatures. If there was any chance of Akuji or one of his lesser lichs being nearby, none of you would take a quest for any price." Despite his best attempt to keep his tone neutral, a trace of bitterness seeped in, and he could see the other man grimace. They began to jog, with Aspen setting a pace he could maintain all day, and Mott matching it easily. Mott finally broke the silence, his deep voice somber. "I'm sorry, Aspen. It seems cold now, but at the time we travelers were new to your world. We were having fun discovering new places and learning new things. Few of us were of a high enough level to be of much assistance, and those that were would never dream of risking the results of their hard work on a quest. Honestly, it didn't matter that much to us that Quarternell might fall, except that it was more accepting of humans than the Dark Races were likely to be. Those of us who joined the Dark Races thought it was great fun, and many who chose to be human wished they hadn't." Aspen's tone was tightly controlled when he responded. "And you? Where were you at that time?" They jogged a while longer before Mott worked out how to answer. "I was having fun too. I did take several of those quests battling low-level mobs. I even got the Goblin Slayer achievement. I was only level 23 though, during the Battle of Bright. It was just entertainment. Something to do after Zoe Rouge went to bed. I started playing a lot more after she told me that all she wanted for her birthday was to be allowed to be a traveler too. I wanted to be strong enough to make sure she was safe here." He tilted his head back toward Codswallop, keeping pace a precise 15 feet behind them as they wound their way through increasingly narrow and rocky paths. "If it helps, Rouge watched the battle on, with a magical device that lets us see this world through someone else's eyes. She was really upset that I wasn't helping. She saw all the villages destroyed by Akuji's army as it passed, and she wanted to go help. She knew about how the Lichs could steal points and levels, and she didn't care. I finally had to block the streams so she couldn't watch anymore. I only let her join because that was all over. Aspen felt his heart clench at the thought of being able to send his daughter away, protect her from the horrors of that time. He stared down at his feet, easily traversing the treacherous path they traveled. Left. Right. Breathe. Left. Right. Breathe. Finally, he nodded. Though I wish you had made a different choice, I do understand that this country, not even this world, is your own. Though you try to hide it, I can tell that you struggle at times to even see those of us who are native to this place as real people. Our lives don't, after all, truly affect yours in any way. You can simply decide one day that you no longer wish to come here, and you are done. Aspen glanced back at the elf girl riding the massive ostrich behind them. His voice barely carried over the sound of their feet and their measured breathing when he continued. Certainly I am not one to judge you for putting your child first. Mott smiled slightly and started to nod. Then his eyes flicked past Aspen's shoulder and widened. He jerked to a stop, grabbing the slimmer man and thrusting him behind his massive armored body. The full helmet reappeared on his head, and an enormous axe in his hand. "Stay back," he ordered softly. "Wyvern." The Wyvern was the level 100 field boss for the entire Whispering Mountains range. Its 30-foot-long body blocked out the sun as it swooped overhead, silent except for the slow beat of its wings. As the two men watched, it banked as it caught a warm updraft, and then lazily began to swoop down again. Two men, an ostrich and a mule, held their breaths as the mighty beast stretched out its neck and shrieked a challenge to the sky. Absolute silence was the only answer, and satisfied, it continued on its way, though it was visible for a long time due to its huge size. Finally, Mott relaxed. "Damn, that was scary. That thing killed me once when I was only level 34, and believe me, you don't forget a thing like that. I turned that quest back into the guild, even though I lost credit for giving up, and I was never sorry." Aspen nodded, tugging at Burrito's reins as he started jogging forward again. Akuji had two zombie wyverns that he used to pull his chariot. He had plenty of magic to fly himself, but he always was a pretentious bastard. Matching Aspen's pace, with Codswallop keeping a steady pace behind him, Mott grimaced and nodded. "I saw that huge sword he used once. What did he call it?" Aspen rolled his eyes. "Chaotic Death Eater. At least that's what our translators claimed it was. In ancient Diomede it was Bujiki, or something like that. I should ask Sarave. I'm sure we oversimplified it." His smile was grim. "I killed him with it." Mott's steps paused for a moment before he sped back up. He was shaking his head. "Every time I think I'm used to the idea that I'm hanging out with the guy who ended the war, you say something like that, and it hits me all over again. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have mentioned it." It was Aspen's turn to shake his head. "It's actually okay. For whatever reason, it doesn't hurt as much lately. I think it's been good for me, letting it out. Lark would say, like lancing a boil." He smiled, genuine amusement lightening his expression. From the time she was a little girl, she could make anything about healing or medicine. She first dosed me with some foul concoction that was supposed to help me sleep when she was only 7. It did make me sleep for a week. Mott's deep chuckle was filled with warm, fatherly understanding. "I understand. Rouge started trying to help me prepare dinner when she was around that age. She wanted to do it all by herself, so I gave her a box of mac and cheese. Ah, pasta with a cheese sauce, but all you have to do is cook the pasta and add the ready-made sauce," and told her to go for it. "I worked at the kitchen table so I could keep an eye on her, but she was really careful. Unfortunately, she didn't read the instructions well enough, so she didn't drain the water off the pasta. We had overcooked cheesy pasta soup and it was not good." The two men laughed, and Aspen glanced back toward the elf girl sitting on her devoted bird. The world these travelers came from was strange indeed, but family was family, no matter where they came from. Rouge and Mott were fortunate to have each other. He was still smiling as Mott gave a strangled cry, and his metal-shod feet swung across Aspen's field of vision. Aspen whirled around, hand going to his staff strapped across his pack. The wyvern was back, and it had swooped down to pick up a tasty snack in a surprisingly hard and heavy shell. Mott was lifted through the air for several yards, and then the scaly monster let out a frustrated growl and dropped him into a lingering snowbank in the shadow of a cliff. The snow crunched and Mott vanished. The wyvern, deprived of its first choice of prey, turned back toward Aspen. Its vicious red eyes flicked over the group before settling on Rouge, sitting up high enough to be easily snatched and carried away. Aspen turned and ran back toward the girl, waving his arms. Codswallop. Flee. Find some trees or someplace to shelter. Go. The ostrich, his eyes rolling frantically, bobbed in place for a heartbeat. Then he ducked his head and dashed forward, taking Rouge's zombie away down the path, just as the wyvern's great claws closed on the place she'd been a moment before. Again the creature screamed in anger, and its eyes focused on Aspen this time. He swallowed and gripped his staff painfully until he reminded himself that a strong grip was a flexible one, and relaxed his fingers slightly. He settled into a fighting stance and waited. The wyvern stretched out its wings and neck, settling close to the ground. A cloud of dust rose from the road that made it difficult to see. He was barely able to dodge as a lightning-fast jaw snapped at his head. Almost instinctively, he thrust the staff under its jaw and up, forcing the mouth closed. He could feel and hear the snap as the monster's teeth crashed against each other. A waft of breath rolled over him, reeking of rotting meat. The dust swirled, and the beast grunted, followed by a furious roar of pain. Aspen heard Mott's shout of triumph. 210 points. Take that, you bastard. Teach you to eat people when they're weak. Guess what? Weak travelers get stronger even if you eat them a few times. The reptile thundered to the ground, and as its wings stopped, the dust settled down. There at the base of one wing lodged in the joint was a huge war axe still quivering. Thick, crimson blood ran from the wound, and the wyvern pulled the injured appendage close to its body. Mott appeared, his black armor covered in filthy slush. He was holding a huge shield in front of him as he ran, putting the full force of his strength behind the solid mass of his armor and body. Battering ram, he bellowed. With racing steps he barreled past Aspen and ran hard into the wyvern, focusing the main force of his strike on the axe already embedded in the creature's wing. With a sickening pop, the axe cleaved through the joint, leaving the wing dangling by a strip of skin. Mott shouted in triumph again, then in pain as the monster's jaws snapped shut on his helmet, left exposed by his nearness and the aftereffects of his attack. The big man's eye glared out from between the 6-inch teeth, his helmet cracked and straining. His gauntlets slipped futilely as they tried to force the mouth to open again. The muscles the beast used to bite down were much stronger than those that held the mouth open though, and his efforts were in vain. Go damn it. Mott's voice echoed in Aspen's head. This thing will pop my head off in a minute, and you have no chance. Find Rouge, and I'll rejoin you when I respawn back at the house. Aspen's hands trembled on his staff, his mind filled with visions of battlefields strewn with death, picked over by the macabre creatures who always followed wherever blood was spilled. He'd slain far too many of those who had lain dead and dying on the field of battle, and nearly as many were his former allies. Once all the fighting was over, he'd run away as soon as he could, swearing he'd live a quiet life and die a quiet death. But this was too much. He was no longer a rook in someone else's game of war, and Mott wasn't just another soldier, facing inevitable death while Aspen waited for the moment he breathed his last so that his body could be turned into a different kind of weapon. This was his friend, and Aspen was through watching his friends die. He dropped his pack from his back, careful even in his haste to avoid damaging the woven cage in which Silas slept. How she still slept, he had no idea, but he would make certain she was safe. He pulled the scythe blade from its makeshift sheath, and with steady and rapid fingers, heated the heel and tang of the blade and brought it together with the metal cap on the end of his staff. A crunching of metal made him look up, to see that Mott's helmet was beginning to buckle beneath the fierce pressure of those vicious jaws. The other man still struggled to free himself, but he was clearly growing weaker even as he bashed his gauntleted fists against the teeth and jaws of the wyvern. Aspen stood, braced himself, and swung for the huge creature that towered over him. The scythe screeched as it stuttered and skipped over the dense scales of the animal, and it snorted at his pathetic effort, shaking its head. If Mott hadn't been clinging to the beast's head now, his neck would likely have snapped from the movement. Go! Mott roared in Aspen's head. I'll be back in a day. Don't die here, you idiot! Aspen felt this description was unfair, though probably accurate, but he drew in a deep breath and pulled the scythe back for another swing anyway. This time he focused on the tattered strip of skin where the wing dangled, and the raw muscle showing through the blood. The tip of the scythe caught in the ragged edge of the skin and pulled at it hard enough that it tore a little more. The wyvern opened its mouth to roar a protest, then seemed to remember it was in the middle of something and closed its jaws again. This time the helmet crunched beneath its bite, and Mott's body fell limply to the ground. Aspen howled with rage, wrenching the scythe from the wyvern's shoulder. He remembered what Gina had told him. "I've been stretching it a little to let you do the magical smithing, since it has to do with farming implements, but don't let it wander too far, or I can't be sure how well it will work." He was holding a farm implement, not a weapon. He needed to. "Oh!" he shouted, throwing all the strength of his goddess-enhanced body into cutting at one particularly dense piece of grass that just happened to be on the other side of the monster standing before him. The wyvern gurgled, and its head slowly toppled from its neck, neatly severed just under the jaw at the thinnest point of the serpentine neck. Aspen fell back in the dirt, landing on his rear next to his pack. A golden glow shrouded him as he leveled, the coruscating brilliance almost blinding him. "Holy crap!" A deep bass voice came from the dirt beside him, and he turned, squinting through his blurred vision. Mott lay there, head still attached to his body, though rather the worse for wear if the blood streaking his dark skin was any indication. Which it usually was. Aspen choked out a pitiful excuse for a laugh. "I thought you were dead." Mott rolled his head so he was facing the sky, wincing as he did so. "Damn close. I have about 200 points left. I managed to pull my head out of my helmet when that boss yelped after you poked it with your overgrown knife. Just in time, because I don't think I'm going to be able to recover that helmet. It was my favorite one, too. Part of the set." Aspen leaned over shakily, resting his hands on Mott's chest. "Heal," he murmured, and his hands lit up again. Mott groaned in relief. "Ah, that feels better. I love having a healer in the party." After taking in the full effect of the spell, the big man levered himself to a sitting position. The two men sat staring at the huge corpse steaming slightly in the chill air. Finally, Aspen reached over and tapped at Silas' basket. "Wake up, sleepyhead. You missed all the excitement." There was no response, and he frowned. "Silas? Silas." He tugged the container from its straps and looked inside. It was empty. 100 scenarios flew through his head, each worse than the last. Then his eyes narrowed, and he looked over at Mott, who was watching with a concerned expression. "Your daughter stole my bat,"